Today, the next incoming tax grab, taxing unrealized gains. Hello again, it's Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics Web. That is posts covering finance and property news. Well, I've highlighted the indisputable fact that the share of government funding taken from households via higher taxes and freezing the bands, so fiscal drag means that we pay more. And despite the promise of tax cuts, that's led to the highest proportion ever. In fact, it is a bigger impost on households than the high interest rate payments that were there thanks to the rate hikes. Now, this is a function of corporations paying less tax thanks to their ability to structure their affairs, and also because they get massive government handouts, and also their capacity to lobby and pressure our elected officials. Given the fact that the federal budget is facing a structural deficit, perhaps it should be no surprise that a new front in taxation is opening. And that relates to taxing assets, and especially unrealized gains. It starts with superannuation, but it's frankly unlikely to stop there. In fact, last Tuesday's budget indeed revealed Labour is full steam ahead on taxing unrealised capital gains. This proposal first appeared in the 2023-24 budget when the ALP proposed taxing unrealised capital gains on superannuation balances, which exceeded $3 million. That would have increased the tax rate on earnings above the threshold from 15% to 30% starting in July 2025. Now, it's worth noting that earnings in the accumulation stage are taxed at 15%, so this is an additional 15% on top of the proportion of earnings on the balance sheets above $3 million. And there's no provision at this stage to index the $3 million cap to inflation, so that while $3 million may sound unattainable through our 2025 eyes, we can't assume that'll be the case in the years to come, because of course inflation is still there. Now, this applies to APRA regulated funds, self-managed super funds, and also exempt public sector schemes. The calculation of earnings includes unrealized gains and losses, and that sparked concerns about liquidity issues for individuals holding their liquid assets, like property. And modelling released at the time of the initial proposal suggested the bill would generate around $2 billion in its first year of revenue, and the view was that this would help fund other changes in the superannuation system, such as superannuation on government-funded parental leave pay. And the belief was that around 4.5% of Australians have a superannuation balance over $3 million, so it was viewed as having minimal impacts on the broader population of Australia. In other words, this would sneak through under the radar. The proposal, though, did face significant opposition, particularly from farmers and self-managed super funds, who argued that it would force premature asset sales to cover tax liabilities. And ultimately, the legislation stalled in the Senate since last year, with the Coalition and Senators Jackie Lambie and David Pocock, among others on the crossbench, refusing to support the legislation. Nevertheless, in the budget forward estimates from last Tuesday, Labour revealed that it expects to tax an extra $9.7 billion from superannuation funds over the 5 years from 2024 to 2029, compared to what it was forecasting in the MIEFO. It's actually worth reading the small print. They said, the upgrade to superannuation fund taxes reflects higher than expected current year collections, higher contributions due to the strength in employment, and an increase in tax from earnings on investments, the budget says. Superannuation fund taxes are highly volatile from 1 year to the next, primarily due to year-on-year changes in tax from earnings on investments and the consequential impact on the timing of tax payments. But wait, earnings on investments? Well, that perhaps should send the alarm bells ringing, because the concept is to tax unrealized gains. And whilst they're talking about superannuation, there is clearly a risk that in a desperate attempt to find more funds, the government, once the precedent has been set, could move on to other assets, including potentially family savings and maybe even the family home. So this is the thin end of a very significant wedge. And that's worth looking at this in more detail. Normally, capital gains are taxed only when an asset is sold, not on the value of the underlying assets, often which are inflated thanks to, say, government policy. For example, consider how much property has risen thanks to bad policy, or the rise in share prices because of big tech, or a rise in crypto prices. Currently, there is no tax liability generally until the rise is crystallized, for example, on sale. And of course, in the case of the family home, equity gains are generally tax-free. But now let's consider Labour's proposal. They want to calculate earnings in total superannuation to include the change in total superannuation balances over the year, with adjustments for withdrawals and contributions. On funds over $3 million, that is. Treasurer Jim Chalmers had previously claimed that this was a modest adjustment and it would make superannuation more sustainable. More spin. But according to modelling by the Financial Services Council, if the $3 million cap is not indexed to inflation, more than 500,000 taxpayers could eventually breach the threshold over their lifetime, including 204,000 Australians under the age of 30. Now, here's an example helpfully given by Treasury. Consider a woman, let's call her Jane, who has a superannuation balance of $4 million at the start of the financial year, but it rises over the 12 months to $4.5 million. Jane would have made $500,000 in earnings. As she is $1.5 million over the $3 million threshold, she would be taxed an additional 15% on one-third of those earnings. So assuming she made super contributions of, let's say, $23,375, she would then pay tax on one-third of $436,625, or in a total of $23,809. That's a nice little earner for the government, which targets a relatively affluent sector of households, and one which the majority of people will probably say, oh, well, that's okay, they can afford it. But if Labour is re-elected with this policy intact, this could well be the thin end of the wedge, as well as freezing the protected level to $3 million, which means over time more will get dragged in, and so it's yet another form of fiscal drag. Because the $3 million cap is unindexed, it's a sneaky tax on young people tomorrow, although it's dressed up as a tax on rich people today. So it's actually a deceptive tax grab, which borrows from young people's future by ignoring that in 40 years, when today's 25-year-olds are retiring, $3 million won't be considered a very high balance. And the precedent would be set to tax unrealized gains. In other words, taxing a profit that you may never receive. And as day follows night, this would be widened, potentially hitting a lot of farmers, small businesses and entrepreneurs, and even eventually perhaps the family home. Now, I should highlight that a similar proposal became a major flashpoint during last year's US election, as former President Joe Biden first floated a 25% tax on unrealized capital gains for ultra-wealthy Americans in 2022, with a policy also supported by Kamala Harris after she became the Democratic candidate. There was quite a reaction, and I would argue one key reason why the Democrats lost. Indeed, billionaire Mark Cuban, one of Ms. Harris's most high-profile business allies, dubbed it as an economy killer and claimed that she did not support taxing unrealized gains, forcing Harris to insist that she still did. Now, the US does have a mark-to-market rule for certain taxpayers, requiring them to report and pay taxes on unrealized gains annually. And Canada says that unrealized gains on specific assets such as foreign securities are taxed under certain conditions. Germany taxes unrealized gains on assets like shares and bonds. And in other countries like Singapore, Hong Kong, and Luxembourg, they do not tax unrealized gains at all, focusing instead on realized gains. And elsewhere, Norway introduced an exit tax targeting unrealized gains on shares and ownership interests where individuals moved out of the country. The tax aimed to ensure that latent capital gains accrued in Norway were taxed, even if the assets weren't sold. The legislation allowed for deferred payment under certain conditions, but recent proposals have tightened the rules, requiring payment within 12 years. The tax sparked significant controversy, particularly among entrepreneurs and affluent individuals. Many felt it was a deterrent to entrepreneurship and an undue burden. As a result, around 80 wealthy business owners left Norway, relocating to countries like Switzerland with more favourable tax regimes. This exodus led to a substantial loss in tax revenue and negatively impacted small and medium-sized enterprises. While the legislation has not been repealed in Norway, it has undergone revisions to address criticisms and to ensure compliance, and the government continues to defend the tax as a measure to promote fairness and to prevent tax evasion. But just to underscore that, it's on people who leave the country. So coming back to Australia, the potential impact on Australia's $4.2 trillion superannuation sector would be significant. People would be perhaps less likely to take investment risks. After all, Australia was built and thrived on risk capital. Why would you take any risk when you might have to pay tax on something you can't afford to pay tax on? It's actually incredibly negative for corporate Australia, for capital markets and for innovation. The Financial Services Council said taxation of unrealised capital gains was bad policy that will impact a range of individuals with illiquid assets, while the Tax Institute warned that it was rife with issues. The accounting giant Deloitte said taxing unrealised gains in the manner proposed was a concerning path for the government to take that would place a significant financial burden on many people, including many small business owners and primary producers with significant real property in their superannuation funds. And the Business Council of Australia pointed out that if a taxpayer has an unrealised gain that reverses and then they exit the superannuation system, they will not have the opportunity to recover the tax they've already paid on the unrealised gain that never eventuated. On the other hand, large industry and union funds had backed the idea. Concerns have been raised by some stakeholders that the proposal will result in the taxation of unrealised gains, Australian Super said in its submission to government on this. The government may wish to consider making clear that this is an exceptional approach and intended to be limited specifically to this measure. However, we note that in relation to the existing 15% tax that superannuation funds pay on investment earnings, large APRA-regulated superannuation funds already typically incorporate tax on an accruals basis. And this includes realised and unrealised capital gains tax liabilities. Members' superannuation balances reflect crediting rates, which are determined daily, and these are net of the tax superannuation funds currently pay on investment earnings. Incidentally, speaking on ABC Radio last Wednesday, Shadow Treasurer Angus Taylor reiterated the Coalition would not support taxing unrealised capital gains. That's moving down a pathway we simply won't support, he said. So the bottom line here is that this is likely to be an issue which hardly will be spoken about through the election campaign, but certainly should be. There is a fundamental philosophical difference between taxing gains on sale and taxing unrealised gains. And at the moment, Labour is going full bore, opening the bottle and letting the genie out of taxing unrealised gains. This is a slippery slope that frankly is going to lead to significant issues later and could significantly impact many more people down the track than might appear at first blush. So once again, it looks to me as though the spin is in full force here, but from a policy perspective, I think this is pure bad policy. I'm Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics. Many thanks for watching, and I'll see you again next time.